Welcome to My Crazy Brain, a podcast where we explore the crazy things that our crazy brains do. I'm your host, Slayton Cooper, and I'd like to thank you all for tuning in today. I'd like to mention, however, that I'm not a doctor. All science mentioned in this podcast is done so purely for the sake of personal growth and development. Please don't mistake any of this for medical advice. Please only get this from people who are licensed and certified to do so. With that being said, let's dive into today's episode. Today, we'll be discussing procrastination and productivity. Now, it is known in today's culture and today's society that we all procrastinate. This is no foreign topic. I do it, and I'm sure all of you guys do it as well. Personally, I find myself procrastinating when it comes to school. And I think this is primarily because of the large workload that I have. And I really just feel like it's daunting. It feels overwhelming at times. And so I find it best to avoid it. And that's what leads me to procrastinate. Now, this could be different for you guys, though it could also be the same. But I do know that school and academics are very common mediums through which we experience procrastination. Now, this can literally be anything, though. It can be putting off doing the laundry or putting off vacuuming and putting these things off to do something else. That something else can vary. And we'll talk about that later. But the point is for now that procrastination, the underlying theme, is the avoidance of a negative experience or an uncomfortable experience in order to kind of feel a temporary sense of comfort. That's essentially all it is. Now, procrastination is especially detrimental because it sacrifices our long-term goals for temporary satisfaction and temporary comfort. Now, the effects of procrastination are varied, right? Especially from person to person. But they all have one thing in common, and that's regret. Now, when we procrastinate, we often tend to push something off until the last minute. And oftentimes, we look back on that situation or back on that experience, and we will think, oh, why didn't I just do it? Why didn't I do it sooner? Right? There's often a feeling of regret that follows procrastinating. But as is now commonplace on this podcast, we'll begin by defining procrastination. We really have to hone in on this. Procrastination, and this is literally straight from Merriam-Webster, but procrastination is the act of delaying or postponing tasks or actions that need to be completed. It's that simple, and that's what we just talked about. Procrastination is a common behavior that many people experience in their daily lives. But what's not spoken about as frequently is that procrastination can have very negative impacts on people's productivity, mental health, and overall well-being, or their quality of life, so to speak. Now, procrastination can manifest itself in different ways. This can be avoiding difficult or unpleasant tasks, or prioritizing low-value activities over more important ones, or simply not getting started on a task at all. Now, despite its negative effects, many people continue to struggle with procrastination and find it difficult to overcome. It's almost like your brain is fighting itself. Procrastination is a pervasive issue that affects people in all walks of life. Now, from students, such as myself, to professionals, in whether it be the corporate setting or STEM or, you know, technical fields. And it's a topic that has been widely researched, right? And this is through lenses of psychology, of neuroscience, and get this, even like behavioral economics, which is a very fascinating concept. But understanding the causes and consequences of procrastination can really help us as people in today's society develop strategies to overcome this behavior and to achieve our goals that we lay out for ourselves. Now, we've been talking about procrastination and these underlying themes, right? How it's like most often the postponing of things that we know we should do in the present. But the reality is that procrastination can take many forms, including putting off important work, delaying important phone calls or emails, something like that. Or let's say even avoiding chores, right? Or personal obligations or responsibilities. So some common examples of procrastination, and I think these were very arbitrary, right? But I think you guys can really resonate with this, are putting off studying for an exam until the night before. Now, if you say you haven't done this before, well, first of all, congrats to you because you're very self-driven and very well-managed. But to the majority of you, I think it is, that have experienced this in one way or another. Just know you're not alone. Like, we all go through this. We all have this issue. And that's why we're here today. We're here to solve this. Really work through it together. Another example is delaying work on a project or something until the deadline is like right there. And you'll often hear about this. Like, procrastination is often done to the point where the pressure of a deadline or the pressure of a due date actually forces one to write. And I mean, the reality is that, and we'll actually talk about this later, but I want to talk about it a little bit right now. But the reality is that the work done in this mindset and in this really, in this situation where you're under pressure, and when the work is very, I guess to say rushed would be a good word. But when you're in that situation, the work that you produce is actually drastically different than it would be if you actually put in the sufficient amount of time and allocated the appropriate amount of time to doing that work over time instead of right at the deadline. Now, this could be cramming for a test or it could be writing a paper. The patterns are the same. And there are some studies linked in the show notes if you want to look into this. But for the time being, that's kind of an underlying theme. It's a very, and it makes sense, right? If you try to do what is due in, say, a month, in a day or two, then it's not going to be as high quality because we have so many thoughts and so many ideas that come to us on a daily basis. And those thoughts and ideas help us write and help us work and help us do things. So those thoughts and ideas can actually help us work towards this project or towards this paper, whatever it may be. And it'll make it a little bit easier because we're kind of spreading out our energy and our cognitive ability over time as opposed to over a few days. So think about it like this. It's like a car. So let's say I have a car and I have 50 miles worth of gas in it. So I have, actually, no, let's just say I have 5 gallons of gas in my car. Let's say I drive a mile a day. Let's just say that. So I drive a mile a day over a period of time. Okay? So by the end of that trip, and by the end of a trip where I drive, I don't even know, the same number of miles, but in 2 days, my car is going to be in better shape than it was for the other trip, if that makes sense. This is a very arbitrary example, very odd and random, but it really demonstrates what procrastination can do. I'm going to have to go a lot faster if I'm driving in 1 or 2 days, right? And I might make mistakes when I'm driving that quickly. I might get a ticket, right? You kind of, you lose your meticulous sense, really. You're not able to parse out details and stuff if you're doing something in a short period of time. And so that's why I think it's valuable to really distribute your time or work towards something over a set period of time, as opposed to a few days before that. Now, another example would be avoiding making like an emotionally intense call or conversation with somebody. Now, this is a little bit different. This isn't really work necessarily, but it is something that is uncomfortable. And that's a very common common denominator in all of this. That may sound cliche, but a common denominator is that everything you avoid, it's uncomfortable. It may seem obvious, but we avoid these things for a reason. And we'll talk about what brain mechanisms and stuff cause us to do this. I mean, the reality is, well, it's really that all forms of procrastination are different. And we can't really just, you know, throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks, right? We have to approach each form and each kind of procrastination differently. So in order to solve this, we can cover and explore these six main procrastinating archetypes and their characteristics. We will discuss which solutions work best for each archetype later, but that's when we go into solutions for procrastination. Now, the following are the six main kinds of procrastinators, according to an Indiana State University study. I do not want to take credit for this. This is their work. Now, first up, we have the perfectionist procrastinator. Now, this is, you know, the person who spends hours perfecting every detail of a task, but they can sometimes not get started on a task because they're afraid of failure or they're afraid that they can't do it perfectly. I really resonate with this. I think this is the kind of procrastinator that I am. And you'll notice you may have different pieces of different procrastinating techniques, right? You may put something off because you're scared to fail or because you want to distract yourself or because you want to challenge authority, something like that. And we'll get into each of these little niches in a second. But I think the perfectionist procrastinator, this is really what I resonate with, and I think a lot of people do as well. It's the mindset that, oh, if I can't do it perfectly, I'm not going to do it at all. Or I'm not in the mindset to do this perfectly right now, so I'll wait a little bit. And I think, and I want to interject here, I think this is actually valuable to an extent. I think having this mindset, but replacing the word perfection with excellent, is actually very beneficial. Now, instead of postponing something because you can't do it perfectly, I think it's perfectly okay to postpone something because you're not like right in the right headspace to do something to an excellent extent. Right. I think that's fair. You kind of have to know yourself, know your brain, know your capabilities. So that's why I'm not completely dismissing that. And we kind of have to inquire about those things as we go through this list. But next we have the dreamer procrastinator. Now this is that person who has a lot of ideas and, you know, these big dreams, right? They have all these ideas and they're very creative, but they struggle to turn them into achievable goals, right? So if you are of the idea that we have the left and right brain, you may think that the right brain is at play here, right? That these people are very right brain oriented, right? And that, now this isn't necessarily confirmed or dismissed by science, but I think it's important that you kind of, and this is only for the sake of, you know, this conversation, but we have to talk about using so-called left brain methods and left brain ways of thinking to put our right brain ways of thinking into, you know, achievable goals. Now, I think in some instances, having another person or maybe a helper, someone who knows you well, help you set these goals is very beneficial. Now, if you are someone who struggles with this, I have it too, right? Like you have these great ideas, and you can also have this and perfectionistic tendencies. You may think you have a fantastic idea, but you don't want to do anything with it because you're afraid that you're afraid of not executing it properly, of not articulating yourself properly, right? I struggle with that all the time. And procrastination doesn't have to be a long-term thing. It doesn't have to happen over the span of minutes. It can be milliseconds. Even as I speak, I may put something off or wait to say something simply because I don't know if I'm articulating myself correctly. So you kind of have to change your perspective here a little bit. So moving on, we have the warrior procrastinator. Now, these individuals tend to lack confidence in their own abilities and are pretty indecisive. This makes it difficult for them to commit to a decision. So they're very, very indecisive. Now, I want to point out here, and I promise we'll get through this list, but the lack of confidence here is very key. If you are to go about your life in an efficient manner, if you were to have self-efficacy, you have to be confident in yourself and in your own abilities. If you lack confidence, then any actions you take will be subject to scrutiny by yourself. And that just sets you up for failure because then you overthink and everything else. So keep that in mind. Now, the defier procrastinator is next on our list. I talked about this a little bit earlier, but this is the type of procrastinator that tends to see life in terms of what other people expect or require of them, rather than what they want themselves. Now, they may also use procrastination as a way of challenging authority. This is what I talked about. But the point is that this type of procrastinator, they view life as sort of a to-do list, right? There is very little passion, right? It's just almost like a robot or a piece, like an algorithm. It's you do this, you do this, and you do this. You follow rules. Now, the crisis maker procrastinator is someone who tends to ignore a task until they're faced with an undesirable situation, at which point they become very involved and caught up in it. Now, these people may also tend to dramatize situations to make themselves the center of attention. So the crisis maker procrastinator, this is the person that I like to, well, this is kind of what I think about when I hear of people who say they work better under pressure, right? You kind of turn it into, you go from, oh, I have an English final due at the end of this week, to I have an English final due in 2 days, to, oh my gosh, I have an English final due in 3 hours. Crap, I got to work. And that's when they do it. And they get very caught up in it then. Now, the stance that people work better under pressure is true in some cases. I mean, there is an extent to which an increase in cortisol can actually affect our performance and in that matter, increase it or improve it. But there's kind of a threshold there. If you're too stressed out, your performance will suffer. So that's why I tend to view this sort of justification for this kind of procrastinating as just that. It's kind of like an excuse, or it's their way of reasoning. Now, lastly, we have the overdoer procrastinator. Now, this person tends to take on more work than they can handle. This person struggles to say no or ask for help, and they get easily distracted from specific tasks and confused about priorities. Now, for these people, who I know a lot of, right? And this is not necessarily a bad thing. I think these people are often very ambitious, but at the same time, they also lack a sense of direction or a sense of passion. And I think without that, you are very susceptible to saying yes to everything, and you can get very distracted. Now, in order to understand procrastination, we have to understand the origin of procrastination. Now, the evolutionary roots of procrastination can be traced back to our ancestors, specifically their fight or flight response to perceived threats. Now, when faced with danger or an impeding threat, our ancestors would prioritize survival and put off less critical tasks until the threat had passed. Now, this strategy helped them conserve energy and focus on the most pressing matters, which are the matters that could help them survive and consequently breed. In modern times, this same pattern can actually be observed in our tendency to put off tasks that seem less important or urgent, even when they are essential to our long-term goals. Remember, our brains are built for survival and not success. Now, this is really interesting. If you think about this, our brains are wired to help us survive in this sort of hunter-gatherer lifestyle. We are literally programmed, we are literally wired to seek food, to mate, and to drink, and, you know, these soul functions. That's what we're meant to do. The fact that we have a prefrontal cortex, the fact that we are able to think abstractly and plan ahead and stuff, is not factored into this. We are often asked to override our forebrain structures. These are like your medulla, your pons, your all of these structures near your brainstem. Now, these are the structures that are similar or resemble the brains of mammals, or not even mammals actually, but lower level thinking creatures. And so we're often asked to and demanded to intervene in these situations. So we are actually overriding these urges to eat, to breed, etc. Now, while procrastination may have had adaptive benefits in our evolutionary past, it can have negative consequences in our modern lives, right? We're built for survival and not for success in the modern world. So, procrastination can lead to increased stress, anxiety, and a lack of productivity. Now, when we delay tasks, or important tasks specifically, we may find ourselves scrambling to complete them at the last minute. Now, this actually leads to rushed or incomplete work. Now, this is where we're getting into the effects. Now, beyond the quality of work, procrastination can also negatively impact our relationships, both personal and professional, as putting off important conversations or responsibilities can create tension and conflict, right? If I wait to, you know, address my, you know, it's completely hypothetical, but address my, let's say my girlfriend about a problem that I've had. If I wait to do that, and if I wait to communicate, conflict will arise. And conflict is, well, it does yield benefit. It's not ideal. We don't always want conflict. Additionally, chronic procrastination can lead to feelings of guilt, shame, and low self-esteem, which can further undermine our motivation and our productivity. This is kind of where we get into like this snowball effect, right? We procrastinate, and so our self-esteem goes down. So when we're challenged with something, we think, oh, well, we can't even do it, so let's procrastinate. And we kind of get into this endless cycle of procrastination. And so how do we break this cycle? We'll get into that later, right? All these solutions. But in order to understand these solutions, we have to really look into the brain and understand what occurs in the brain during procrastination. During procrastination, when we procrastinate, we would see a battle in our brain. Now, I'm not talking an ancient battle between Rome and Greece or something like that. I'm talking about the battle of neurons. This is something we don't even see too often, but it's the brain structures competing, specifically the battle between our limbic system and our prefrontal cortex. Now, if you need a refresher, the limbic system is your brain's pleasure center, and the prefrontal cortex is responsible for planning and other executive functions. So when a person procrastinates, the limbic system overrides the prefrontal cortex and causes us to seek pleasure. And when I say seek pleasure, I am also saying avoid discomfort or displeasure. Those two terms are synonymous. Now, in this case, we really just put off what we should do now for tomorrow. And the reason for this, and the reason for procrastination's prevalence in today's society, is that this delay, this avoidance, provides us with temporary relief. Now, for just a minute or two, that weight on our shoulders, be it a work report or studying for a test or even just doing chores, seems to go away. In this instant, our brain seeks to survive by avoiding unpleasant tasks. Survivor or not survivor, but survival conquers success, right? The brain structures responsible for keeping us alive, in that case, override the brain structures responsible for planning. Now that we understand that, we kind of have to look into solutions for procrastinating. I mean, we can't just talk about all this and then suddenly, oh, having a solution. We actually have to think about it. And because we have to think about it, our first solution is mindfulness. Now, we have talked a lot about mindfulness in past episodes, but we can apply it here actually to solve our issues with procrastination too. So according to Judson Brewer, now this is the director of research and innovation at Brown University's Mindfulness Center and the founder of Mind Sciences. The standard habit loop is trigger behavior reward. Now this is set up for survival. You see food, you eat food, and your stomach sends a dopamine signal to the brain to what you ate and where you found it. But that same thing also drives anxiety and worry. And hey, get this, procrastination. Now this is set up as a habit loop. Because the trigger is unpleasant, the avoidance behavior makes that unpleasantness go away. Yeah, right, think about this. We're kind of, instead of adding a pleasant stimuli, we're removing an unpleasant stimuli, right? Now, this unpleasantness goes away temporarily with this brief relief and then furthers the procrastination cycle. Mindfulness, however, allows us to see how stressed, anxious, and malicious procrastination is to our quality of life. It makes us stress. It makes us anxious. And it is malicious overall. It destroys us. Now, what does this mean? We talked a lot there about habit loops. Now, mindfulness and even meditation are effective because they tap into these loops. They help you open your mind and acknowledge your own thought processes, right? When we notice we're engaging in something that we shouldn't, when we notice that we are distracting ourselves with something and procrastinating or putting something off, we will actually be able to intervene there. That's the whole point here. Another solution is to change your environment. Now, unbeknownst to many, the stimuli in our environment can trigger certain habits, just as we just talked about. For example, having my phone right next to me while I'm studying will make it much easier for me to divert my attention and seek pleasure in my phone, effectively avoiding the unpleasurable task of working or doing what I set out to do at my desk. It is important, then, to really just be cognizant of what your setup does, what your environment does, and how it facilitates your goals. Right? We have to remove distractions, remove potential escapes from discomfort, from these unpleasurable stimuli. Because the easier these things are to access, the easier we will be able to procrastinate. Right? We have to make what we want to do easier and what we don't want to do more difficult. I remember hearing a story about a guy who took his remote apart. Like, I think he wanted to play the guitar more often. His guitar was in his closet and he had his TV remote lying around. Wouldn't you know it, he never really picked up his guitar because it's easier to just pick up the remote and watch TV. However, what he did was he took the remote, put the batteries in a bunch of different locations around his house. And then he took his guitar and he put it right in the middle of his living room. Now, sure enough, he actually started to pick up his guitar more because it's easier to just pick up your guitar than go around the house and scavenge for batteries in the remote. But he picked up his guitar more. He was able to play his guitar and actually set out what he wanted to do. What happened? What caused this switch that allowed him to really acknowledge that he was, so to speak, addicted and unable to intervene? Well, this is mindfulness. He was able to be aware of his own tendency to pick up the remote instead of the guitar, right? Now, earlier we talked about all these archetypes for procrastination and specifically for procrastinators. But now we really have to dive into those and get solutions and provide solutions for each type. Now, if you see yourself as a perfectionist procrastinator, try shifting your mindset to focus on excellence rather than perfection. Try to avoid this all or nothing thinking. Make a daily to-do list that's practical and gives yourself time or a time limit for each task. Now, this is called, I used to do this actually. And I think I would set, well, I was going through OCD therapy and I would have to, I think it was time spacing, something like that. But instead of doing something to the very best of my ability, doing it perfectly, I only gave myself a certain number of minutes or a certain amount of time to work on something. This effectively helped me work more efficiently. Now, if you're a dreamer procrastinator, start training yourself to differentiate between dreams and goals. You have to break down each really creative idea, major project, whatever it is, into smaller, more manageable steps. Plan out each step in writing and try to seek out more interaction with other people, right? Consult somebody. Help them help you write your goals. But I think the biggest kind of roadblock for these kinds of procrastinators is that they have all these wonderful ideas, but they aren't told what to do with these ideas. So they effectively have to write them, they have to write themselves instructions. And that's what this is describing. We have to take baby steps, kind of. And we have to provide ourselves with instructions to apply our ideas. Now, if you see yourself as a worrier procrastinator, try recognizing that making no decision is actually a decision. As funny as that sounds. But following a two-step decision-making process where you just first commit yourself to this goal and then determine the steps that you'll take to achieve it, each day try to do something that you've been consciously putting off. But you have to follow that two-step decision-making process. Like, you have to be able to make a decision. And that may sound simple. And it's not like telling someone who's depressed, oh, cheer up. Right? Or telling someone who's anxious, don't worry. But it's unfortunate that I have to say it like this, but the only way you can kind of break through this is just to do it and look back and see how that affected you and learn from that. But if you're not willing to kind of make yourself vulnerable, then you can't really improve. Now, if you're a defier procrastinator, if you do something kind of just to avoid rules, etc., then try learning to view what others want or expect as a request, not really a demand. Try to work with a team rather than against it. Kind of cooperate. Do something that is specific and will satisfy you because it's done your way. I hear of a lot of people who kind of had this tendency and they took to art, right? Because it was a very potent way to illustrate their own ways of thinking. If you are a crisis maker procrastinator, try identifying other self-motivators besides stress and avoid over-dramatic language. Try to focus on positive or active when discussing a task rather than the negative or reactive. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're put under pressure to work. If you're the overdoer procrastinator, like many people I know, acknowledge the difference between priorities and demands. They are not the same thing. Try to depend on others for approval. Do not try to depend on others for approval. Don't forget to take breaks and relax without feeling guilty or ashamed. No, rest while feeling guilty or ashamed because of not being productive is not actually rest. So therefore, you're not being productive by not getting rest. So rest and don't worry. Take that time to rest and acknowledge that that rest is actually productive. because not many people see it that way. Sleep is productive, even. By far the most productive thing a man can do, I argue. Now, that really wraps up our solutions. So, thank you for joining me in our discussion on procrastination. In summary, there is a constant battle in our brain between our pleasure-seeking components and our planning components or parts. Procrastination is the avoidance of displeasurable activities to seek and find temporary comfort. However, this can actually prove to be detrimental when we seek to fulfill our long-term goals, but are tempted by distractions. We can leverage mindfulness and a number of other strategies to make ourselves aware of how we procrastinate and why, and use this to set ourselves up for success in the future. If you are learning from and or enjoying the podcast, feel free to give it up to a 5-star review and or share it with a friend. And if you have Instagram, follow our account at My Crazy Brain Podcast. These are great zero-cost ways to support the podcast. Thank you again. I'll see you next time on My Crazy Brain.